Okay, Alexander, let's talk about Macron and Biden's phone call. And they're back to being friends again, maybe? I don't know. How do you read it? Because the ambassador is coming back to D.C. And it looks like, this is my hunch, and you could weigh in. I'm sure there's going to be money that's going to be paid to make up for everything. And Biden said that they'll start including France into the club, right? So, you know, he threw the Biden White House through Macron a bone, and I'm sure this will pass. This will all pass with time. I don't know. How are you reading this?
Absolutely. But, I mean, we shouldn't underestimate the extent nature of what happened, because, of course, if you read the statement that's been published on the White House, it is absolutely groveling. It is the President of the United States groveling to the French president. So he does a whole set of things. He, first of all, the statement admits that it was Biden who called Macron. He also says that he accepts completely that they were wrong to keep the whole thing secret, this whole AUKUS nuclear submarine deal secret. He also says to Macron that, you know, he will come to Europe to meet with Macron in October. And perhaps the most extraordinary thing of all, and the thing that really made me sit up and take note, is that he said that the US supports actions to strengthen European defence which are complementary to NATO. Now, that suggests support for the EU army project that Macron is now pitching. Now, the US has not been keen on that project up to now, but apparently the US is now, if not giving exactly the green light for it, it's giving an amber light for it. And last but not least, he's basically saying that Macron and France will have some kind of a role in the Indo-Pacific region. So, I mean, it's groveling. It doesn't, I suspect, mean ultimately very much. I don't suppose American policy is really going to change. Well, they've been forced to make all kinds of concessions to the French in this call, and to try to patch things up with the French, and to, you know, smooth ruffled feathers in Paris. And as a result, they've been forced to agree to things from the French which they might not have wanted to agree to. So again, I come back to what I am said many times and in many places now, both on this channel and on my own channel, which is that so much of the trouble that's been caused with this AUKUS announcement and with this nuclear submarine deal would have been avoided if they'd just been careful to consult more widely and to do the whole thing openly and publicly. Springing an idea like this on the French in the way that it was done was a huge mistake. And now they've had to grovel to the French and apologise and ultimately, as you absolutely rightly say, shovel money in their direction and give them some kind of token role in the Pacific and give them some degree of token role for setting up an EU army that the French and Macron are going to run with for the next few weeks and months. So to be straightforward about this, I still don't think there's going to be an EU army. I think there's far too many people in Europe itself who are opposed to this idea. And I still don't think we're going to see any big role for the French in the Great Pacific Strategy. But it can't have been a good thing for the United States to be put into this position. And it's happened entirely and solely because of the incompetent way in which this AUKUS a deal was announced without the French being informed about it in advance.
Yeah, what a terrible foreign policy team in the White House.
It's the worst ever.
Yeah,
I mean, these people are utterly incompetent. They have that dangerous combination of extreme arrogance and complete incompetence. They're bungling amateurs of the worst kind.
Yeah, we saw that in Afghanistan, and now we're seeing it with this play out with France and Macron. But isn't it great that a lot of money will get shoveled to Macron, who is really just a front man for the globalists, right? So, I mean, you know, if it's going Macron's way, that means it's going to end up the globalist way, whether it's going Macron's way and you're talking about an EU army, or it's going Macron's way and you're talking about climate change or whatever the hell, you know, Macron is pitching for. He's just a front man where the money will eventually end up in the pockets of the powers that be. So that's great. And isn't it great that you have a president like Joe Biden for all of these bumbling, incompetent fools, so that when they do mess up, as they seem to be doing now on a daily basis, they can just always get Joe Biden to grovel and look silly and just basically, you know, call Macron and say, you know, I'm Joe Biden. What can I do, Emmanuel? Yeah. What can I do? I'm Joe Biden. Yeah, so just forgive us.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the third
time. It's great to have a guy like that.
This is the third time this year that this has happened, that they wheeled out the old man in order to mop up the mess. Actually, it's the fourth time. And the first time was when they got him to call Putin. You know, this is just after, you know, he made his killer comment. And, you know, when it looked like there was going to be a war in Ukraine, which they're about to lose. So they got the old man to call Putin in April and set up a summit meeting at which absolutely nothing was agreed. There was that occasion. Then they got him to basically mop up all the mess after they made a shambles out of Afghanistan. Then they did the same thing about a week ago with Xi Jinping, when they got him to call Xi Jinping, because, you know, they said, you know, they realized that things were getting a bit hot in the South China Sea and the Taiwan Straits, and they wanted things to cool down a little hot because of the way they'd arranged things themselves. So they wheeled him out again to talk to Xi Jinping, and that didn't achieve very much. And now they managed to upset and anger the French. And what do? They wheel Joe Biden out again to do the same thing once more. That's his role. That's all he does anymore. He doesn't actually take any proactive diplomacy to speak of. If you wanted to get a sense of what an empty vessel he is, just read his speech to the United Nations General Assembly, or listen to it, better still. Notice the stony silence in which it's listened to by the delegates. Barely any applause, only mild applause, a sort of laundry list of comments, none of which really gel or hold together, no overriding or overarching theme. They can't bring him to mention China or Russia by name. I mean, the whole thing is just astonishing. It's the weakest performance of a president at the General Assembly I've ever seen. So he does nothing proactive. All he does is they haul him out to clear out the mess when they've made it themselves. So nobody that way is responsible. No blame attaches to anybody. You just depend on the old man, as I said, to come along and make the soothing comments and to try to tamp everything down, as, you know, the Laurel and Hardy team in the State Department and the National Security Council create a mess and leave it to the old man to sort out.
Yeah, he's not a president. He's just an excuse for them, an excuse for all their incompetence, an excuse for their corruption. Yeah. An excuse for all the bad stuff that's going on in the world, whether you're looking at Afghanistan or the border. You know, like, it's like you say, they just wheel out Joe Biden and, you know, that's it. You know, what can you say? This is Joe, everybody. This is Scranton Joe. And they've been doing that with Joe Biden. We have to be fair. Before he ended up in his I don't want to say the dementia state, say the alleged state that he's in. Before he entered that, he was a gaffe machine, and everyone also gave him a bye as well. You know, whatever he said, stupid stuff he said, at times very controversial stuff. Some people would say racist stuff that he would say. Everyone always let it slide because it was Joe, and Joe says a lot of gaffes. And now they've just taken it to the next level. They've coupled that with his age, and there you go. Oh, absolutely. Crisis at the border? No, don't worry about it. It's Joe. You know, he pisses off Macron. Just get Joe to call him and he'll grovel and we'll give Macron a couple of billion, which will come back to us anyway in one form or another. And that's that. I mean, this is not the way to run foreign policy. This is a complete freaking mess.
Absolutely not way to run foreign policy at all. As I said, it's like Laurel and Hardy are in charge. I bet Laurel and Hardy would have come with good intentions and would have probably done this better. But I mean, this is the worst foreign policy White House administration I've ever seen. Everything they touch turns to dust. Sooner or later, everything turns to dust. And we've just seen this happen again.
All right. So what happens with France, with the U.S.? We've touched upon it. What about France, Australia, France and the U.K.? Anything there that needs some ironing out?
Well, I mean, there's lots going to be. They're going to need to do a lot to iron things out with French. But I mean, that's going to be left to the old man in October. And I think we can already see the contours to a deal. You know, we'll have him say, well, you know, I don't really object to an EU army. It's not really what I want, perhaps. But you know, if the French want to go along with it, well, they can. And of course, France is our great ally in the Pacific, and we'll be doing joint exercises there, and we'll be providing lots of money to the French so that they can build up their bases in the Pacific also, and things of that kind. So, I mean, we're going to have some of that. So they're going to smooth things out there. The country which is probably more difficult, the two countries that are more difficult, and which they didn't really think about, and it's quite clear they didn't think about it, are India and Japan. Now, the Indians are seriously alarmed because, of course, we have a meeting of the Quad coming. And what they've now been told, in the most straightforward terms, is that they have second ranking in the Quad, so far as the US is concerned, to Australia, because the US has now made it very clear, there's been announcements, statements about this, that they're not going to provide the same level of technology to India that they have to Australia. So the Indians may be a lot more difficult to talk round. They're already very upset about the Afghanistan situation, and I don't really know what the United States can do to India that will talk them round. And I doubt very much that they will accept, a nice conversation from Dear Joe. So I don't think that's going to work very well. Japan is another problem and another layer of difficulty again, because they too have been told that in the Quad, they're number two, they're ranked number two. And of course, they have lots of resources and they have their own policies, and they're becoming increasingly concerned about the US too. So this thing has done real damage. I mean, I think that's a point to make very clear. Not perhaps the deal itself. You can argue about its merits or its weaknesses. But the way it was presented to the world, the way it was sprung in this world, is done real damage. The French aspect of it is the least of it. Because, you know, you can always buy off the French. They will always, if you stroke their amour propre, if you, as smooth their feathers, you can get them, you can bring them round. India is a different matter altogether. It's a much more powerful country, for one thing, a much more ambitious country, for one thing. And, of course, Japan isn't something of an enigma, but one that bears watching. And this administration, let's face it, is not up to the challenge of dealing with these things. It doesn't really have an overall strategy for working with India. It doesn't really have that kind of close relationship with Japan that previous administrations had. Donald Trump got on well with India. He was friends with Narendra Modi. He worked well with Japan, with the Japanese. The Japanese actually liked him with this administration. The Indians and the Japanese will be looking at it, and they'll be shaking their heads, and they'll be making their own plans, and we'll be seeing more of that as things pan out. And whether this deal with Australia itself is ever going to be executed properly, well, that I'm beginning to have my doubts about also.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's really interesting when you read the mainstream media, they make it like, they present the picture that the Biden White House has created this 5D chess geopolitical strategy in the Pacific. It's such a charade. It is such a joke. We're dealing with a president that his most difficult choice of the day is which flavor ice cream he's going to
absolutely
eat. And that's not an exaggeration. And you're dealing with very complex, very difficult situations going on right now in the world. And this is a nightmare to have this guy running the ship.
Absolutely.
This thing running the ship.
Absolutely. I mean, what you need at the moment, I mean, this is a difficult time. We're in a transition period. We've seen this great alliance system starting to emerge in Eurasia. We see major changes in the world economy. We see all kinds of things going on. What you need is a firm hand at the tiller. In other words, a pilot you can rely upon to weather the storm. What we have in the White House is a blank, an empty chair, or as close to an empty chair as you're ever going to get. We have a president who can't make decisions, a vice president who is hopeless, and a foreign policy team that's the weakest and least competent that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Well said. All right, guys, thedurad.locals.com. Check us out there. You'll find the link down below. Please join that community. And we have a lot of great content there. So you'll find a link to thedurad.locals.com. Please join us there. Take care.